¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Yeah. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. Yeah. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
Our town is pretty small. So tiny that we don't even have a Walmart or even a four-way stoplight. But it's still ours, and we treasure it for what it is. Been here my whole life, and the only thing that's really grown is the local cemetery. Paradise Fields, they call it. I guess if I wanted to spend eternity somewhere, it would be with a catchy name like that, huh? Anyway, the graveyard was pretty packed even back when I was a kid. So much so that there was hardly any room when we buried my papaw. I remember someone saying it was a good thing he broke his back so they could fold him up and fit him into the ground. Anyway, a few years after that, I started hanging with the wrong crowd. Wanting to be cool and fit in, I wound up getting the paddle from the principal's office more times than I can count. But no matter what I did, it was still nearly impossible to impress this one group of boys. James, Greg, and Todd, or the Three Musketeers, as they like to call themselves. There used to be 4 of them, but Rob had left the group a while back. I would always see them skipping class and running off to buy smokes from the corner store and be jealous, wishing I could be just as brave as them. I didn't really know about it at the time, but Greg's daddy was screwing his teacher, and Greg knew about it, so he hung it over her head. "We can do whatever we want or it's your job," Greg would tell her. He was a bit of a prick, but I was young and dumb and wanted to be like them, so of course, I would find ways to skip class too and meet them there. "Hey guys," I said nervously that first day when I just hit in the gym after breakfast. Todd laughed immediately when he saw how red my face was. "Look at you, just like my dad's ripe tomatoes. What a pussy. Did you run all the way here?" he asked. Todd could be cruel, but I was supposed to take the jab and prove my worth, so I nodded and said, "I didn't even bother going to the first period." "What's your name, kid?" James asked. "Steven," I said. "Tell you what, Steve, you really want to hang out with us? You gotta prove that you're brave," he said. I think it looked like he had a sparkle in his eye. "Come on over to Paradise Falls tonight after curfew. If you can get there and finish our challenge, we will be your friend for life," James told me. "How will I sneak past my mom?" I asked. "That ain't our problem. Be there by 8:30 or the deal is off," James decided. I told him I would, and as it turned out, getting out of the house was the easiest part of the night. My mom wound up having to work a double shift, so only my sister was watching me. I told her I would give her $20 if she didn't say that I went out. "Where are you headed anyway?" she asked when I passed her the money. "Just gonna go smoke some weed at the cemetery," I lied as I grabbed a coat. Racing across town in the middle of the night was exhilarating. Only a few street lights were on, and the graveyard felt like it was eclectic and full of spirits when I arrived. The way the moon cast its light down on the tombstones, there were just so many. I got there just barely after 8 o'clock, and I thought for sure the trio had ditched me. Instead, they emerged from behind one of the larger mosques, probably built pre-Civil War, and James whistled softly when he saw me. "Wow, Steph, didn't think you had it in ya," he commented. I made it with time to spare, so what are we doing here? James gave his colleagues this wicked grin. "Us? We're here to see if you're up to snuff and can fit in with us, so we've prepared a series of 3 challenges for you to do. If you can do all 3 before time is up, guess what? You will be in with the gang for good." "Okay, sure, I can do that," I wanted to sound confident. James just laughed. "I'll go first then," Todd decided as he pointed towards the headstones. "You know how this cemetery is pretty big but has tons of graves in it? Well, tonight those graves are the safe zone and the ground is like lava. You've got 5 minutes to jump from here to the end of the plot without touching the ground," he decided. The trio laughed and raced off to the other side of the tombstones, leaving me in the dust. Once out of range, they called out to me and the game began. I stood on the edge of the mausoleum, trying to figure out which way to go across the graves. Then I began to hop. As I did, I will admit that I said a prayer to Jesus and asked for forgiveness. I remember when Papa died, I had actually danced on another grave, and Mom warned me to never disrespect the spirits. "You'll pay for it if you do, either in this life or the next," she told me. As I jumped toward the next headstone and part of the old relic crumbled, I couldn't help but reflect on her words. What if she was right and I was really awakening a curse by playing this silly game? Then I heard the trio holler excitedly as I nearly tumbled on the grass, and my resolve to win got stronger. I had to prove I could be the best, so I kept going. I made it to the other side in about 4 minutes, leaping from the last headstone and even managing to do a backflip to where they were standing.
"Whoa, that was pretty cool," Todd admitted.
The other two didn't seem very happy that I had passed. I should have wondered if they ever really intended for me to get through to begin with.
"Beginner's luck. That one was easy anyway. Anyone could pass it," Greg said as he took off his backpack.
He unzipped a pouch and showed me three small trinkets he'd brought with him before explaining.
"I'm gonna make sure you don't pass this one, twerp."
He rushed off to the graves as James passed me a scarf and ordered,
"Put this on so you can't peek."
I obediently listened and stood there waiting as they chuckled and finished their game, coming back about 10 minutes later and telling me to pull the scarf off.
"All right, Stephanie, I hid all three of those items somewhere in the graves. Find them in 3 minutes and you make it."
"Like you ever will," Greg laughed. "It's Steven," I corrected, not even realizing they were bullying me about my name. James shoved me toward the graves and put a timer on. I scrambled about looking for any clues that might help. I knew Greg wouldn't have made it easy, but the obvious signs like grass being pressed down by their footsteps made it easy to find the first, nestled in a bush behind a large tombstone. I followed the same clues to find the others, excitedly racing back to them with the trinkets in hand. All three of them were angry now, and I didn't understand why.
"All of this was just prep for the last challenge. No one has ever passed this. If you do, you'll be legendary," James decided.
He led me out toward part of the graveyard that had a little fewer headstones. I recognized the area because this was where Papa was buried. Then James pointed toward an open hole. I peered down and saw a wooden coffin sitting in the dirt hole, probably in preparation for an upcoming funeral. And immediately, I felt dizzy even before James explained what the challenge was.
"Get in there and we'll bury you. If you can beat the record of 6 minutes underground, you will be in our club for life," James explained.
You want me to get in there?" I asked, looking down at the cramped space.
"Well, we could call the whole thing off if you want," he said, kicking some gravel.
"No," I said quickly, too desperate for acceptance to even think clearly. I climbed in the hole before another word was said.
"I'll show you. I will make it to 10 minutes, I said excitedly.
The boys shared a wicked look with one another and ordered me to lay down against the ground. I did as I was told, waiting as they placed the cover on the coffin. Then I heard the shovels and the dirt being piled on. I closed my eyes and tried to not panic. I could do this. My whole body shook and I lay as still as I could. Eventually, it got quiet. So quiet that I shouted and asked if they were done. But I didn't get a response. I waited another minute or so, trying to think if I had passed the record, but I was also starting to feel lightheaded. The oxygen in the wooden box was limited. I started to bang on the cover louder, yelling that I was ready to get out. I never knew what it was like to be claustrophobic until then, but they didn't respond. More time passed by. I was certain that it had been at least 20 minutes. The coffin felt cold, and so very dark. I hadn't noticed how dark it was at first. I had tried to ignore it. Now, it was all that I saw. The space felt so confined, and I kept screaming, trying to stay awake. My body was shaking. I could feel myself struggling to take breaths. Finally, I became close to blacking out, and I felt the air escape my lungs. I was sure I was going to die. The next thing I knew, I was in my mom's arms. I was so numb to the entire world that I couldn't remember anything. She took me home and got me some warm soup, explaining that my sister had said I had gone out there with some friends.
"What the hell were you thinking, Steven?"
I heard that about a dozen times, and I hardly got any sleep that night. It just kept feeling like the moment I fell asleep, I would be trapped again. In fact, I had trouble for years after that too, scratching at my mattress or waking with cold sweats. Terrible nightmares of that cemetery. Of course, the next day I confronted them about it.
"What? Cemetery? You must be crazy. We would would never go out there, Todd remarked.
Why have we asked our contractor we found on Angie.com to be our kid's legal guardian? Because he took such good care when redoing our basement that we knew we could trust him to care for our kids, all 8 of them, should something happen to us.
Are you my dad now?
No, sorry, I do basements.
Connecting homeowners with skilled pros for over 30 years. Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find pros for all your home projects at Angie.com.
Yeah, and not for some stupid games. You are a psycho, Greg agreed. Their wicked grins told me what I needed to know. They had left me there to die. I still have those same awful nightmares, and I worry one day when I die, I will be trapped in that place forever. A graveyard built of memories. 2009. 6 of us stood around a shallow grave with shovels in hand, exhausted from the dig as fresh frost fell over top us. The air smelled of dirt and sweat. If anyone had told me this would be how I would start my senior spring break, I probably would have laughed in their face. I was supposed to be on a road trip with my sister 1,000 miles away. Instead, I was burying her in the woods alongside 5 strangers who claimed to be her friend. She died in a hit-and-run the week before, her perfect life shattered in an instant. It said something about the irony of life, but I couldn't tell you what. I wasn't there when they found her body, thank God, but I did hear that she lived for 19 minutes while paramedics tried to pry her from the twisted metal of the car. A few days later, my parents agreed to cremation, a quiet ceremony and to disperse her belongings to anyone who wanted them. This was how we found the time capsule. Wrapped up in a burlap sack like a picnic basket, the small cylindrical metal object sat in the trunk of her Ford Focus like a treasure chest waiting to be unlocked. A few of her college notebooks told me that she had been keeping it for a friend, but that she also intended to bury it in the Carrington Woods Cemetery as a memento to her own childhood. Dad said it would be a good idea to fulfill that wish and to put her ashes in the ground alongside the capsule. I remember logging onto MySpace and shooting a message to a few of her friends, telling them my intentions. I figured since a lot of them hadn't shown up for the funeral, this secluded meadow with a few nameless tombstones would be a better setting. No need to dress up. Just come and remember my big sister Cassie. The ones that did come didn't say much, but they each brought a few items to put inside the capsule. Photographs, letters, jewelry, the kinds of things you might place near a memorial. I didn't ask what they were. I don't even remember asking who most of them were. It didn't matter at that moment. Nothing mattered. I kept thinking, my sister was gone, and that whatever was left of her was now meant to be a part of history. Buried forever, or for the next generation to dig up. I think I promised I would keep in touch with the people who came. They mimicked the sentiment. Then we went our separate ways, fully aware that we would never do so. I remember thinking that I felt guilty for not putting anything of my own inside the capsule. But Dad told me I was wrong about that. Cassie is in there. She's a bigger part of you than any trinket would have been. Present day. Tragedy infects memory. It starts small. A few people open doors for you or give you a discount at the store as a token of respect. They think one act of goodwill can undo all the pain you're experiencing. They mean well, of course. No one intends to put you on display or treat you different. It just happens. Suddenly, this is what they associate you with. The only part of your life that matters anymore. It's as if time stops when bad things happen and you're paralyzed. The only way to move on is to forget the tragedy yourself. It's a necessity to survive. I didn't want to forget Cassie and what she meant to me, but gradually, that is exactly what happened. I moved away, got married, and had a life of my own. It was a tragedy that brought me back to her. I was coming home for the holidays, Thanksgiving break, but instead my turkey day was spent answering questions for the police, trying to hold it together. When I came up their driveway, I could tell something was wrong. Dad and Mom had said they were going to be waiting up for me despite the late hour. Instead, there wasn't a single Christmas light on, the power was off, and not even a single dog was barking. Stepping out toward the door in the cold, I had a premonition. You know when you can just tell that things aren't right? I knew before I stepped into the house what I was going to find, and yet I had to go check.
to see for myself if the vision was true. A few moments later, the dark fantasy in my head played out in reality when I saw my mom's body lying on the living room carpet with bullet holes in her back. The entire den was a mess, everything taken from the flat screen to the coffee table ornaments. I could see from the blood and chaos that Dad had tried to put up a fight before he fled. And wandering into the next room, he told me that it had been worth it.
Big savings are in the air. Don't miss your chance at 15% cash back during Rakuten's Big Give Week. Shop and get rewarded at your favorite stores like Adidas, KitchenAid, Expedia, and hundreds more. So go ahead and refresh your closet, spruce up your home, book that trip, and much more. But 15% cash back is only from May 4th to the 11th. So join now. Go to Rakuten.com or download the Rakuten app and join for free and start saving. That's Rakuten.
One of the thieves was there dead as well, having bled out from an impact to the skull. I remember telling the police that I didn't know why anyone would do this. My parents go to church regularly. They help out at the homeless shelter. They are good people. No one seemed to know where Dad was at, and the police theorized that the robbers were holding him hostage now. It was sometime during the questioning that one of the cops said something that caught my attention. They had moved the body of the thief and come across, as the officer put it, something peculiar. When we went to examine it, I knew immediately what it was. Cassie's time capsule. To see it unearthed was unusual already. No one besides four or five people even knew where it was buried. But to see that it had been dug up by burglars had me asking a dozen questions. Was there something inside the capsule that they wanted to steal? How did they know it was there? What did Cassie and everyone else put inside of it? I asked the officers if I could hold on to it, and they didn't see a problem with it. That was about 2 days ago. Dad still hasn't been found. The capsule arrived today, and I think it took all of my willpower to open it up. The police told me that it was rightfully mine since no one else in my family was alive to take it, and it occurred to me that this little object was responsible for so much bloodshed. I pried it open with anger, tossing out the items onto my bed. None of it seemed to matter, not at first. There was jewelry I knew that her old flames had given her from ages ago. Pictures of time she spent with her friends going to the nearby woods to camp. She loved those woods, I thought as I focused on a picture. The date read 2013. It made me freeze as I realized the photograph had to be a mistake. Cassie had died in 2009. Who was putting things in the time capsule after her death, and also making it seem like it was her? Then I saw newspaper clippings, strange headlines that made me feel an uneasy sense of dread. Killings near Carrington Woods remain unsolved. Two boys go missing at Carrington Cemetery. Graves with unidentified bodies puzzle authorities. Ownership of Carrington Cemetery remains in question. I didn't know what any of it could mean, but the next batch of items told me this was something deadly serious. Photographs of my father in the woods, digging those graves. Was Cassie monitoring them? I saw notes that were written to my mother, and I realized that they had been having correspondence with each other after Cassie had faked her death. I reached for a notebook that had my name on it. Sometimes she would do that just to confuse me and then tattle to mom or dad that I read her diary. I recognized her handwriting immediately. Paul, you have questions. The cemetery will offer answers. Come find the truth. Cass. Just reading those words made me shake with anticipation. Was my sister really alive? How could it be possible that she had remained hidden all of these years, and more importantly, why? I went to the woods as soon as I could. I told my wife it wouldn't take long. The empty meadow felt haunting. I found Cassie's grave easily because it had been dug up. And then I noticed other graves had also been dug up too.
Don't move,
a voice whispered from the trees. A woman I hardly recognized came out of the woods. Cassie. She was covered in camouflage and holding a camera. Then I heard the discharge of a gun. Behind me, a large body fell into the newly dug grave. Dad had followed me and was about to attack us both. Cassie stepped toward me, her hands shaking as she dropped the pistol. It's taken me almost 20 years to prove our father was a serial killer, Paul. Once he realized that I had been using this capsule to hide evidence, she looked toward the road and seemed sad. Mom paid the price for not being careful. And all those years ago, Dad thought you were gone. You've been here this whole time. I realized as we hugged. I had questions of my own that shook me to my very core, but none of it seemed to matter as we melted into each other's arms. I lost so much when I lost her. I wasn't sure I would get it back now, or it would be lost in this graveyard alongside all these other memories. But maybe we can make new ones.